Now, to show our gratitude, we're not going to be like the other guys and jerk you around and bullshit you. We're going to tell you the truth.
Shane Douglas is the man who ignites the new flame of the sport of professional wrestling. The era of the franchise. The era of the ECW.
North South Connection Podcast Network. Welcome to the most extreme menage a trois violence you'll ever experience. I am JT, along with Jenny and John, here on the Extreme Three-Way Dance Podcast. How are you guys doing?
Extreme.
Extremely tired, John.
Yes.
Yeah. Extremely. We're getting ready to shovel our way out of this blizzard. Blast our way out of this blizzard.
Well, it's good that this episode I get my power back off the phone. Hopefully, the quality's a little bit better. It was different. It was definitely different recording like that in the dark and quiet atmosphere. But hopefully everyone enjoyed it because it was a big episode. We witnessed Raven winning the ECW World Heavyweight title, so we're recovering from that. And speaking of blizzards, we're back in the middle of one because our show tonight is the Big Apple Blizzard Blast 1996 from Queens, New York. Any thoughts before we get started on this one?
I feel like they put an extra word on this title. Like, I feel like they could have left it at Blizzard or left Blizzard off and said Blast. I don't know. It's one too many words. If I'm being nitpicky.
Blizzard Blast.
Big ass. Like ECW, I thought it would be Big Ass Blizzard Blast. When I kept looking at it in my mind, that's what I kept saying it as.
Okay, that's its new name then.
Big Ass Blizzard. I mean, aren't you surprised they didn't call it that?
I am.
It seems like it would be one. All right, well, let's dive right in. Like I said, we are in Queens. Joel Gertner is our ring announcer. He thanks the fans for braving the freezing cold weather. So it is indeed a blizzard on this night. Paul E. dangerously hits the ring to a big pop. Says there's a TV crew from A Current Affair at ringside. And the fans boo the shit out of that. Paul says they will never get laid by Deborah Norville. Joey says Paul would like to engage in A Current Affair inside her edition to make some hard copy. Johnny, your thoughts on Deborah Norville?
No recollection.
None? I mean, Joey seems pretty horny for her.
I was a big Current Affair fan, but I don't remember her standing out. But yeah,
really? She was like the hit of that, right?
I don't know. Oh, yeah? Nah, I just remember more of the stories. They did some wrestling exposés.
Oh, okay. I don't know. She looks like she's held up pretty well. Deborah Norville.
Well, Joey's into her. That's all that matters to us. And that takes us right to our first match as Taz, in the opener, takes on the Shark Attack Kid. Jenny, your first impressions of the Shark Attack Kid?
Who?
The Shark Attack Kid.
I know Shark Boy. I don't know anything about Shark Attack Kid. He looked rough. He's not ready for Taz.
Johnny, any thoughts?
Not to be confused with Sullivan's Dungeon of Doom. I guess it was that around this time when.
Yeah, he says. Joey calls it the Dungeon of Dumb.
Dungeon of Dumb, yeah. Shark Boy, yeah. Not Shark Boy. What was
Shark Attack Kid? Oh, well, Shark was
Earthquake.
He was a shark.
Shark. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
We have Shark. We have Shark Attack Kid and Shark.
Boy. I can't keep these fishes.
Under the sea.
Mammals.
Fishes, I know.
We open with an extra match here as Fonzie leads out Taz. Great entrance and package they've assembled, all of this. And Joey gets a Dungeon of Dumb Lion Man. Fonzie rants to intro himself and Taz. He shits on Current Affair and Letterman for some reason. Taz is all business here, no fucking around. Grabs a Fujiwara armbar right away. SAK, as we'll call him, grabs a rope. Taz works the arm from there. Styles puts over his vast experience in the ring, his different fighting styles. Taz hits a fireman's carry. Tazplex slugs away. A shark attack kid actually gets two on a sunset flip before Taz murders him with a clothesline. Styles' shark attack is considered to be the number one independent wrestler in New York.
Come on.
Yeah. I don't know if Grooney is his competition, I guess. Well, he's a damn very much. The kid grabs a chancery, but Taz works out, snaps him into a head and arm. Tazplex, crowd is just eating this up. Taz follows at a super belly to belly and demands Fonzie blow the whistle, and then finishes with a Taz mission. Another fun squash for Taz, who's just amazing in this role. Just a prick that can destroy you in the ring, and having Fonzie as his annoying punk manager is brilliant. Perfect gimmick. So we'll get to the post-match in a minute, because something big goes down there. But the match itself, I went a star and a half on, John. What'd you think?
Same thing, star and a half. The usual Taz, 1,000 suplexes, and effective squash for what it was. But it's curious that 911 wasn't in the building. I don't know if they originally had something planned for that, or it was a no-show, or we got to keep an eye on that.
So, I like this. I don't mind watching Taz do just murder this guy. This poor guy. I mean, local competitor did not have a good showing against Taz. I gave it a star and 3/4, like y'all said. The crowd was super hot for it and very effective for what it was. And Fonzie's always fun.
Well, the fun continues as Taz calls out 911 and tells the sound guy to play his music, calls him a schmuck. Todd Gordon brings out a ref, but 911 says 911 doesn't want to wrestle, and he left the building, and he doesn't know why. Fonzie says he's not surprised and says Gordon has a yellow streak, and he kicked his butt in Philly, and they can go again here in New York City. Fonzie sends Taz outside, and he calls Gordon in. Gordon steps in the ring, and Fonzie punches him down, as always. Gordon fights back, but Taz makes the save, and he's about to pummel Todd Gordon, but who makes his debut? In ECW, but Bam Bam Bigelow. Straight out of Asbury Park, Fonzie rants that Bam Bam's a WWF star and he needs to go. We get a big pop for Bigelow from the Queens crowd, who says Taz doesn't have to suplex 911. He just has to suplex the Beast from the East. So this is a great moment. It does seem like maybe something's going on with 911. We'll see if he shows back up again. But they definitely do seem to take some shots at him here, not being around. And Bigelow steps in. Bamber had just wrapped with the WWF in late 95, was at Survivor Series, lost to Goldust. Of course, he had his issues there toward the end with the click that kind of derailed his push. He was supposed to be in the 96 Rumble. He was announced, and that doesn't happen. And then here he is right after. So we'll see how he progresses in ECW and what his role will be. But I thought it's a really well-done debut. I like that they did it in New York as well. I thought that was well executed because it'd definitely be a crowd to do. I'm not that Philly wouldn't, but I just thought it added a little something special for the Queens crowd to see Bigelow there. But Jenny, what did you think of the debut of Mr. Bigelow?
I popped huge. I wasn't ready for it. I mean, I knew he was coming, but I guess I wasn't aware it was going to be this early. But it was an amazing surprise. And if we've switched out 911 for Bam Bam, I'm okay with that.
It's definitely, I mean, look, I've been fine with 911, but it's definitely a big upgrade just because he can do so much more in the ring. And you know, 911, we've seen it pretty much with him. And we did get some comeuppance with Taz having choked him out. So, like, we've kind of probably seen the max of 911. So if we do swap him and Bigelow's kind of the guy that comes in his place, I think it's a huge net benefit, Johnny.
Yeah, I love how the fans really appreciate a star like Bigelow who... Who, like you said, he was at the end of the road and kind of downplayed by the time he left the WWE. So it's kind of like a fresh thing for these fans. They really appreciate it.
The Despacito himself, El Puerto Riqueño, is in the house, teaming up with Axel Rotten to take on the Headhunters. And what a match this is. My lord, on paper. The Headhunters have, of course, Damian Kane and Lady Alexandra. Who
the Godfather.
Yes!
Say it right.
Don't put some respect the Kane. On his name, sir.
The Godfather.
Where does he rank on the list of overall Godfathers? We got Nate Milton. We got the Godfather. Charles Wright.
Marlon Brando.
We got Marlon Brando.
Nate's number one.
Nate is easily number one.
Everybody else is just fighting for second.
Yeah.
Godfather's pizza.
Marlon Brando's number two. Charles Wright 3 for pimping.
Yeah, not easy. I'm sure we're missing some more, but I would definitely have Damian Kane as far down the list as possible of Godfathers.
Easy top five.
All right, anyway, LA is with him too, Lady Alexandra. Axel and Puerto Ricadio are such a fun team. Lady Alexandra is quite the interesting cat. Just say everything about her is very interesting. So the headhunters, one of the headhunters, I don't know which is which, we'll call him Uno, starts off...
Mo Fett and Mohim or Mahim. Or, I know one's Mo Fett.
Yeah.
Not necessarily physically, but that's his name is Mo Fett. I think
they
actually
both
Mahim,
Mo Fett.
Actually, Mahim might be Mo Fett than Mo Fett.
Mo Fett and Mo Blood Pressure, that's who they are.
Mo Falada.
Oh, God. all right, so Mo Fett and Axel start in the ring as Kane kicks LPR to the floor. The headhunter cranks a side headlock. He buries Axel with a clothesline. Axel dodges an elbow, peppers headhunter with right hands. Puerto Ricanio comes in, tries a clothesline, but just bounces off and flops to the mat. Headhunter crushes him with a headbutt and hits a sweet tiger bomb for two. That was awesome looking. Headhunter mauls PR with a clothesline, makes the tag. Headhunter whips PR by his hair and then tags and hit a double pancake and a stereo leg drop and splash, and the crowd is eating up their offense. And it is really impressive. I mean, they do hit it with a lot, like, real heavy power spots. Puerto Ricanio,
to see huge guys like that do a friggin' moonsault, that's...
they unload, yeah. They're flying around, and everything they hit is, like, impactful. Puerto Ricanio hits a spine buster, but a headhunter picks him up during the count. What else is new, of course? The epidemic and I'm going to pandemic status in ECW with the picking up during the two counts and the covers. Damian shit talks to fans as headhunter continues to batter poor LPR. Headhunter slams him, heads up top, comes up empty on a big elbow drop that looked like it fucking hurt when he landed on the mat. LPR tags Axel, comes in and unloads, doing what he can and sticking to moving. Axel slugs down Kane and clotheslines a headhunter. Nice rally here for him. Puerto Ricanio tags in, hits a big splash off the top, but he can't even get one. Headhunter mashes PR with a clothesline and finishes him with a top rope moonsault to a massive pop. And like you said, Johnny, that looks awesome. A hell of a fun match. Insane to watch. It was a real spectacle. Headhunter is a while. The crowd is super invested. Nice hope spots by Axel. Puerto Ricanio takes an awesome shit kicking. Just a really fun match. Joey says Kane has legitimate tag team title contenders under his stead here. So I went 2 stars on this, Johnny. Where do you stand?
Same, 2 stars. I love that double team, that splash leg drop combination. That was a unique move. And LPR actually got a little offense. I was surprised that little... You got a little splash, got a little shine for about 15 seconds, which is more than I expected. And, not to shit on him one more time, but Damian as the godfather of wrestling. That's almost as ridiculous as somebody on Twitter calling themselves the podfather or something.
Yeah. Something like that.
Sorry. So,
I went 2.5 stars on this match. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, I fucking lost my shit on this match because these guys are like next level, like, and just picking up PR by his hair and then just tossing him like halfway across the ring sounds like nothing, but they make it look like his like scalp was gonna come off. It was so awesome to watch. Like you said, I cannot tell them apart, but it doesn't matter. Axel, the smart man in this match, just letting PR take all that punishment, barely even tags in. I really liked his strategy there. The fucking moonsault was killer. It was just fun as fuck match to watch, and I am super excited to see where the godfather of wrestling is going to put this giant tag team.
And what made it even better too was because LPR is so small and they're just whipping him around and beating the shit, like, it even added to the impact offense that they had going on.
He's the perfect guy for this match.
Ms. Smith's favorite loser in the house, Mikey Whipwreck himself, teaming with Cactus Jack, his old and now renewed friend and tag team title holder partner teams up against the Eliminators. A very interesting match here. The titles are on the line. Old buddy champs back at it against the Red Hot Eliminators. Cactus is kind of in a weird, confusing spot, but he seems happy with it all. Raven is out there. He shoves Mikey around as they get in the ring. Jack has his WWFNF shirt on. And Joey kind of gets the psychology here. Why is Mikey doing this? He's standing by his friend, his hero, Cactus Jack. Even though Cactus is kind of conflicted, he's still dealing with Raven. Saturn grabs a sign from the crowd that says, "Mikey, if Titan calls, please go." Mikey and Cronus start off. Cronus shoves him around. Mikey recovers and works the arm. Cronus escapes and tags Saturn, but Mikey's able to control the arm and shows nicely. Jack tags in and gets the mic and tells Mikey if he isn't going to help, he can just leave, and he'll defend the titles just like he won them, all by himself. Joey begs Mikey to wake up and get out of there. Jack goes right at Saturn, but Saturn twists him around and chops away. Jack catches him with an elbow and some boots and drops a leg for two. Mikey tags back in, and the Eliminators take over with a slingshot back suplex. Cronus breaks out a handspring elbow, grabs a chin lock. Cronus drops Mikey with a powerbomb. Saturn hits a knee drop off the top for two. The Eliminators tag in and out and mash Mikey for a bit. Mikey crawls and tags with a belly-to-belly. Jack comes in hot. The Eliminators double up and take over on Jack, but Jack comes back and hits a cactus clothesline on Cronus. And then ducks a Saturn tope. Jack hits a springboard back elbow off the bottom rope to Cronus and pitches Saturn inside. Jack folds him up with a pile driver, grabs a glass bottle and breaks it, but Mikey stops him from using it. So Jack shoves down Mikey, but Mikey drop kicks him from behind. Saturn then tries to use the bottle, but Mikey saves his partner. Mikey heats up and moves to the Eliminators, hitting a top rope Frank and Mikey on Saturn, and then bashes Cronus with a boot. Mikey accidentally bangs into Jack, and the Eliminators hit total elimination on him to win the match and the titles. Kind of a weird match. It was very story-focused and kind of disjointed because of that. I thought the work was good. It was solid. The finish was well done. But Jack and Mikey were so out of sync. It was on purpose. It was by design. But it made the match drag a bit for me. And I thought it was a good time to, A, get the belts on the Eliminators. They've earned it. And they're more into the tag division. And B, get them off this, out of this feud that's kind of spinning like crazy with Mikey and Cactus and Raven and everything going on. There's no need for the tag belts to be in the middle of this. They brought them back together with it, so it worked. But it's time to move along. So Jenny went 2.5. This is fine. I just thought the storyline really overtook what could have been a better match if it was more on the level.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that, but I'm here for this story. Like, I was here for all of the Mikey attitude, you know, he's just not comfortable with any of this with Cactus. He's still just kind of reluctantly going along with it. You know, what I like, and I agree, I knew the Eliminators were going to win this. I mean, we won't, like you said, we don't want the belts kind of with this nonsense, but... What I like about the Eliminators is that they can sort of adapt to whatever team they're facing. Mm-hmm. So like we saw that Ray and 9-1-1 match, you know, that was really cool. And they did a bunch of different stuff. And so this, they just sort of matched that weird flow that that Whipjack has given them. You know, like you said, there's not a lot of flow to the match itself. It's just mostly the story, but the limbs sort of take advantage of that, right? They clue in on that and then they win the belts. And I love the fucking total elimination, even if it is on Mikey. So I gave it 2.75 stars, Johnny.
Yeah. 2.5. As you guys, covered, it's more of a story match, but with Cactus, that's all good. And Mikey, I like how Mikey shows that he's, you know, he's standing up to being bullied by Cactus and Raven. Mm-hmm. And even though to a point he puts up with Cactus's stuff up until he broke the bottle. And, you know, then he stood up and, you know, established the right from wrong there, that enough was enough. So a good story here and good work by all the parties involved.
It's a real, like, struggle for Mikey, too. You know, it's like, what the fuck? You know, what is he going to do? Is he going to deal with Cactus? Is he going to just say fuck you to Cactus? I don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting. We'll see how it plays out for sure. I do think you made a really good point, Jenny, on the Eliminators tag team style, too, about how adaptable they are. Like, we've seen it cross across all these teams. Mm-hmm. And
from the Pit Bulls and everyone else.
Yeah, and it's like they've come up real fast. Like, I feel like the first time we saw them, they were almost presented. I don't want to say it's like a jobber team, but they weren't really presented in a way that made you think they were going to elevate this quickly. And I don't know where Jason is, if he's gone again or what, but he hasn't been with them. But he's like, they've really shown themselves to be like a top tier team here. And I don't want to keep burying dirt on Public Enemy, but getting them out of the division, I think, has opened a breath of fresh air, and letting the Eliminators and the Pitbulls kind of lead the way, I think has been a net positive, especially with the new rules. And I'm really excited to see how the Eliminators continue to progress, because they've already been awesome. And I thought the point I just thought it was really a point to call out that they have already shown to be so adaptable from a style point of view.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what they do with our headhunters later on.
Yes. We'll see where that goes. But for now, they are our new tag team champions. Raven comes in. He beats the shit out of Mikey. Cactus steps in and shoves Raven and bitches at him. But then he turns and clotheslines Mikey. Raven gets a chair and batters poor Mikey as Jack holds him. And then DDTs him on the floor. Or on the chair, I should say. So any thoughts on this post-match, John, where we're pretty much severing Cactus and Mikey now?
Yeah, it was inevitable. I mean, Mikey held on long as he could, but it's obvious to, you know, to go full heel with the Cactus.
Finally, I'm just glad that it's all done. You know, it's like, let's move on.
Yeah, it was an interesting way to bring it back together, just to bust them up again quickly, but right. I think they were just trying to get them intertwined again. All right, let's head along there. Joey Styles is back in the ring with the Eliminators and Francine, who's now come out. Joey says she's brave, and he won't be able to help her if they attack her again. Francine says nothing turns her on more than two men with gold, and Joey's flabbergasted. Francine says that after she took Total Elimination, she knew that they were the better team. In come the Pitbulls, and they attack with the chain as Francine yells at the Eliminators, so is this all a ruse? Saturn gets hung over the top by the chain, and Cronus eats a super bomb. Francine has scissors, and she cuts Saturn's hair as he's being choked by the chain. That was a good setup by Francine, and some good quality revenge by the Pitbulls as this feud continues. They did get the Eliminators got the one over. They beat up Francine. So this is a pretty good setup and payoff to attack them and reignite the feud again.
Yeah, I like Francine getting in there, hanging him with the chain. She was getting raw there.
Did anybody buy her ruse? No. Walking out there with her broke-ass neck brace and talking about...
Battered woman syndrome, you know, sometimes.
It was pretty obvious, yeah.
She was great. I mean, she was, like, really relishing hacking all of his hair off and hanging him with the chain. Like, I really liked her in this.
Yeah, it was great payback. It almost didn't even matter that it was obvious. Like, who gives a shit?
No.
Yeah, I mean, it was the attack itself was really good, and the hanging with the chain, just all of it. All of it was great. All right. Joey recaps what we just saw, and he says there will soon be a 6-person dog collar match at the arena soon to come. We hear from the gangsters who have issued a challenge to Eliminators and brag about costing the Pitbulls their titles. We head to our next match. It is tag team action as our newfound friends, Shane Douglas and Tommy Dreamer, take on Raven and Stevie Richards. So a big-time match here here in Queens. The Flock hits the ring as Raven and Kimona take a seat. Stevie grabs the mic. He wants to grab everyone's attention. He says has his lackey, Stan the Blue Meanie, he calls him. I don't know if that's his official name or not. This is the New York debut, so he says he and Meanie will officially now be known as the Fabulous Ones, and we get the official Fargo strut by Steve and Stan. So I guess probably not his official name, right? Just kind of a throwback.
The Fabulous Fargo strut.
Yes. I know you like that one, Johnny. Joey wonders if the city of Memphis could sue for this egregious theft that's going on here. As they settle down, Deep Purple hits, and out comes Shane Douglas and Tommy Dreamer and Beulah looking very happy. Joey says Douglas is thrilled to be back here. Dreamer sits in the corner like Raven, and Beulah gives him a very sexy lap dance. As Joey says, his boxers just shrunk. We get a very long intro from Joel Gertner, and it felt like a big-time boxing match. Dreamer and Stevie start off as we get a pussy chant from the crowd. We get a back and forth from them that ends with Tommy clotheslining Stevie to the floor. Tommy's definitely feeling himself now with Beulah at his side. Like we talked about it a bit last episode where some of it felt forced with him kind of being like the cool guy. But this Tommy feels a little bit better to me. Like he's kind of focused. He just feels good. Like he's got his woman by his side. He's going to be a dad. Like you can tell he's feeding off of that now. Tommy beckons Raven, but Raven doesn't budge. Shane batters Stevie on the floor as Tommy keeps beating on Raven, or keeps baiting Raven. Stevie comes back in, takes off his shirt, and then puts on the classic yellow Razor Ramon one and puts a toothpick in his ear and mimics Razor Ramon.
Yes.
Which was just an amazing dig at Shane, playing up to Shane Douglas's issues with the click. I thought that was awesome. Shane is not pleased, and he beats the shit out of Stevie and rips apart the shirt. Joey says Stevie won't be doing the Fargo strut any soon as he's taking a beating. Tommy tags in. They take turns desecrating the shirt and beating on Stevie. Tommy grabs a video game system and smashes it on Stevie's back. Raven is just standing in the corner stoically, not budging at all as Stevie's just getting murdered. Tommy bashes Stevie with a phone and Shane pretends to make a call. Joey says he's calling Stanford. Tommy goes up top but whiffs on a big splash, and Joey reminds us that Tommy was the first man to kick out of the Superfly Splash back in the day. And that goes back to our early days of this podcast in early 1994. It seems like an eternity at this point.
Wow.
That was a blast from the past.
Right?
Sure.
I mean, that was like some of our first episodes.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Wow, Snooker, yeah.
I remember.
Raven finally tags and uses the chair on Tommy. Stevie comes back in and tries a powerbomb, but drops Tommy hard on his head and neck, which is just really gross. I mean, that could have been bad. Tommy takes a nasty bump. Raven and Stevie work together to pummel Tommy using weapons along the way. Bulow looks on concerned as the beating continues. Stevie and Raven have built good team chemistry over the past year, I will say that. Tommy tries a comeback but eats a hard Stevie kick. Raven stuffs him with a pile driver as they keep Tommy trapped. Tommy makes a tag and Shane comes in and cleans house, eventually using the chair on Raven and hot-shotting him with it. Shane hits a pile driver on Stevie, Raven makes a save. Shane hits the belly-to-belly, but the ref is tied up and things break down. In comes Cactus Jack. He ties up Shane, and then Raven smacks him with a taped fist and gets two. Stevie, Meanie, and Raven all land shots on Shane until Sandman comes in and canes the whole flock and the ref to big pops. Raven chokes Shane with his tape and then buries him with a pile driver as Stevie wakes up the ref, but we only get two. Stevie and Raven continue to overwhelm Shane with double teams and trickery, picking up near falls. Shane and Raven collide heads, but Stevie's in, and they keep Shane contained as Bulow's really concerned as things unfold. Stevie gets a Stevie bomb for two and lays in a stiff chop, but Shane makes a comeback with a back elbow. Tommy catches the hot tag, comes in with a frying pan, and cleans house. Tommy power slams Stevie for two as things are breaking down. Raven smashes Shane with a chair as Meanie comes in and slowly climbs the buckles without looking, and he ends up moonsaulting Stevie, and Tommy covers, but Raven comes in and smashes him with a chair and DDTs him for two as Shane makes a save. Shane throws Raven outside and meets him with a plancha as Bulow attacks, sneaks in the ring and attacks the frying pan and attaches it to Tommy's boot. Tommy gets up and hits an enziguri with the pan on Stevie for the win. It's a really long match. In a good match. It had a classic heat segment in the middle. The crowd was fully enveloped in the heat segment, which was great. Shane sold his ass off. The blended violence of wrestling was nice and never gratuitous, which can happen in these matches sometimes. Yeah. I appreciate them not just doing the walk, brawling, and weapons. They mixed it in. It was natural heat from this feud with all four guys knowing their role. I thought everyone looked sharp. It was a testament to Stevie, too, that he hangs with these guys now. He doesn't seem like the fourth wheel. Like, he seems legit in there with these guys. And Tommy gets a win. He still hasn't pinned Raven, but he gets a win. And it was a unique finish. That's a creative one. That's never really been done, at least that I've seen. So I went 3.25, Johnny. I like this tag. I thought it got a lot of guys, everyone over. And everyone played their role really well.
Yeah, 3 stars. I love the Razor spot with the shirt, which is one of my favorites. The toothpick, just Stevie, awesome as usual. And for the longest, Shane got doubled and beat down for the longest. They teased that hot tag real well. And finally, when Tommy got it, a unique spot. It looked a little awkward, but at least they tried something different. And they somewhat pulled it off. It wasn't the best looking, but it was unique.
You talking about the boot on the frying pan?
Yeah, the frying pan.
All right, well... What was your rating, Johnny?
3.
All right. So I did 3.75. This shit was wild. But like you said, more contained than what they usually do.
Mm-hmm.
So like in the beginning when Bulow did her lap dance, she failed to mention that Dreamer flips off Raven across the ring and then Bulow grabs his hand and sucks on his bird finger. That was pretty hot. Enjoyed that. And then I thought Shane looked really good. He was bumping his ass off. His body looked sick. I mean, like, he wasn't annoying. He was flying around as much as he could. And, you know, I think Stevie was elevated a little bit for me in my eyes. I know you guys have enjoyed him before, but I think this is one of the first times where I didn't find him like super annoying. The Razor Ramon shit was funny. And then I enjoyed his teaming with Raven. And like you said, he did that pretty great looking Stevie bomb and that nice chop on Shane. And but then he got moonsaulted by Meanie, which made me laugh too. So I really like this. It was I thought a little bit more controlled than some of their normal stuff. And I love the finish. So good stuff.
Jenny's getting on the franchise train.
Mm-hmm. About time.
Coming along.
I'm just giving him credit. I'm not fully sucking his dick yet, y'all.
No, well, you're gonna get a shout out from him like you did from Conan with that talk.
Well, let's not get ahead of ourselves.
All right, next match, right back to the ring. Rey Mysterio Jr. versus Juventud Guerrera. Another great intro from Joel Gertner, who's in his bag tonight, really feeling it as well. Juvi has arrived as another fresh opponent for Rey Mysterio from Mexico. Rey extends his hand, but Juvi spits on it, and we kind of draw the lines right there. Mm-hmm. Rey knocks Juvi outside, comes back with an airplane spin into a slam, gets a crucifix for an air fall. They trade some holds on the mat and pop up and buzz around into a Rey armbar. Continue to mix it up on the mat. We get a wild bridging lay lock from both. They hum around the ring, dodging offense, slipping free of holds until Rey monkey flips Juvi to the apron. And then Rey comes off the top and it's a hurricanrana to take him to the floor in a really crazy spot. Back inside, Juvi gets a somersault leg drop to the head and then plays to the fans, but ends up eating a clothesline from Rey. Rey tanks him down with a swinging head scissors and then follows with a springboard hurricanrana. Juvi bails out as Rey meets him with a somersault senton over the top, and the crowd is just eating all of this up. Rey puts an open chair on Hoovy's neck and rams him into the post. Back inside, Juvi battles back and unloads a nice release German, nails him with a springboard spin kick for two. Rey blocks a powerbomb, but Juvi shoves through it and hits a tiger bomb for two. Juvi presses Rey up, drops him into his arms and chest, and hits a fallaway bridge combo for two. Rey dodges a charge, gets a snap hurricanrana for a near fall, follows up with another one, and then it's a nice power slam. Rey goes up top, but Juvi crotches him, loads up a splash mountain, but Rey counters to hurricanrana and picks up the win in a very fun match. I think it's a step behind Rey's other stuff that we've seen so far with Psicosis, but this was tight. The crowd was into it. Both guys are so fast. They work with such snap offense, and they're just showing off in these matches, keeping things fresh and unique at ECW. Rey has very much, to me, felt like an attraction. He hasn't, besides the 911 stuff, he hasn't gotten involved in too much, you know, other with ECW. I guess he had that one match with Mikey, but beyond that, he's just kind of wrestling these attraction matches, which I think is fine. It's like a big part of going to a show. You get to see these, you know, Extreme Lucha guys on display. So I went 3.5, Jenny. It was a really fun match. Again, something unique to ECW at this time.
I'm at 3.5 for it, too. Probably 1.5 of that goes to Joel Gertner for those intros. They were amazing.
Yeah, he's great.
Oh, wow. Yeah, he totally nailed those. This was like so much fun. Just like amazing pacing and complicated, but yet just like you said, snappy and impactful stuff. Mm-hmm. It's like when the crowd finally settles in. Oh, we're going to watch real wrestling now. You know what I'm saying? Like, we're not going to do like frying pans on anybody's boots or Nintendos or anything. It's like settle in to watch the real wrestling, you know? And Joey sort of like feeds into that too. Mm-hmm. So it's always a different feel when you get these guys putting on matches like this, but they're always awesome. Like, who doesn't want to watch this shit? Awesome stuff. 3.5 stars, Johnny.
Yes, 3.5. Definitely what you guys say. It's at the perfect spot of the card. There's 8 matches, mm-hmm. and this is the fifth match. So we get all the angles, the promos, the MoFats, the cookie sheets, the Nintendos, and all that, you know, for all the other matches. And this is, you know, just sit back and watch all the moves. And you know, after a while, I was trying to record all the moves, and after a while, I just became like Vince and just wrote a lot of what a maneuvers. In this
oh, me too.
But beautiful. Good usage of Rey, and the crowd really appreciates it.
Speaking of Rey Mysterio Jr., he also just popped up recently on Wrestling Warzone with Chad and I. That alternates every other Thursday with this show. And he's on the scene in WCW. We saw his arrival against Dean Malenko, match against Psicosis coming up soon at Bash at the Beach. So he's, you know, he's in the throes of it here for us on the Warzone. We're recapping every night on Raw, pay-per-view, and Clash into the summer of 96. And that's not all. He's also recently debuted on Tuesdays here on this feed on the North South Connection on the Ruthlessly Aggressive podcast. Jake Williams and a variance of guests that he welcomes in as he goes through the Ruthless Aggressive era. He's in summer of 02, getting towards SummerSlam, and he just saw the debut of Rey Mysterio on SmackDown. So Ray Ray is all over the place. Where he's not is TNA, Jenny, but you, I, and Aaron are there. And we are recapping. We're into late 02 TNA, getting toward the end of the year, talking all things nonstop action. So, of course, you can check that out every Tuesday. You can follow Aaron's Descent to Madness. Every other Wednesday on the feed, you get New Gen on a Mission, Tim Slomka, Justin Pratt, talking to the new generation era of the WWF starting at Survivor Series 92. They'll be covering some TV, some off-brand topics, some wrestler spotlights, the pay-per-views. It's going to be a cool little journey that they're doing. Also, we have a limited series going on. Chad Campbell and Drew Wardlaw unveiling their GWCW Greatest Match Ever list, part of the project we did at Place of the Nation in 2020. So they're revealing their top 100 JCP WCW matches of all time. So you can check that out. On Fridays, our Pulp Culture Day, you either get Shrink Wrap, The Psychology of Superheroes, or the Gang Gets It Always Sunny podcast, myself, Josh Richard, Aaron George, going through the history chronologically of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, or in early season two. And on that fourth Friday, you get Rank and File. It's our bracket-based show with Jordan Duncan and you know, kind of some maybe rotating guests. Usually his buddy Eric's with him. They pick a different topic each time, build a bracket, and determine the best in that genre or topic that they're discussing. Saturdays, No Holds Barred. It's a potpourri show with me and Aaron, usually list-based, live-watch-based. You get that twice a month. On the other Saturdays, you either get a mailbag, me just kind of going through some listener questions, or every fourth Saturday from the Squared Circle to the Silver Screen with the Cowboy and Logan Crosland doing movies, reviews that feature wrestling, wrestlers, or about wrestling. So those are your Saturdays. Sundays, you get Remso Martinez and Mark Claire going on Second Print Comics. It's a pretty good potpourri comic show there. And also, whenever there's a pay-per-view in the world of wrestling, whether it's WWE, NXT, AEW, we have Tim and Marcus on the Viewer's Choice podcast breaking that down with an instant reaction. So their first one was Rumble 2021. They did that in the wee hours of the night. That was up and posted for you live. So it's really their thoughts right after the show. They do it a very unique way. The next one will be for NXT TakeOver Vengeance. Vengeance Day, whatever the hell it's called. Not Valentine's Day, Vengeance Day. That'll be coming at you. Mondays, you either get The Year That Was. That's Aaron George's vanity project. He spent 3 years going through every WWE pay-per-view of all time. He's ranking the years. That alternates with Now Entering the Rumble, where Aaron and I are breaking down the performance of every single Royal Rumble entrant of all time. On the top of that, throughout the week, at some point, you'll get This Week in Sports with you, Johnny, the Cowboy, Ryder, and Senior. Plus, who else knows what may pop up along the way at the North-South Connection. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/North-South Connection. Spread the word, rate us, review us, follow us, download us. We appreciate all the love. Joey Styles in the ring. Taz and Fonzie show back up again. Fonzie shits on New York City, 911 and 911. Talks up Taz as the better man. Rey Mysterio's back and says 911 may not be here, but they shouldn't talk about him. What they did to him was personal, and Rey is not afraid of Taz. Fonzie says Rey better show some respect, and he rants until Rey drop kicks him with nails him with a spin kick. Rey hits a springboard dive into Taz and tries another one, but Taz catches and slams him hard to the mat. Rey comes back on the springboard hurricanrana and tries to springboard again, but Taz catches him with a head and arms Tazplex. The crowd is buzzing as Rey blocks a choke slam with a hurricanrana. Taz comes back with a released German and sends Rey flying onto his stomach. Joey Styles comes in and tries to check on Rey, but Taz backs him down until the whole locker room empties and Taz and Fonzie leave. JT Smith is out there too, and he talks to Joey about being Italian, and they kicks at Rey until Hack Myers beats the shit out of him, which was great. Rey looked like a badass, but Taz an absolute fucking machine. Just a great build. I thought this was a tremendous segment that got both guys over. Rey not backing down, and Taz is destroying him. And JT Smith is really funny in there, too. More on him in a bit. But, Jenny, what did you think of this whole segment? I thought it was really well done.
Oh, it was. Yeah, this is great. I didn't know that I wanted to see Rey versus Taz, but, yeah, give me all that shit. He kind of got his ass beat a little bit towards the end there. And why was JT stomping on Ray?
He's just an asshole.
I was like, what the shit? But Hack was like, no, we're not having any of that. Save the day.
It was strange to finally see Taz told in somebody that he was suplexing her around. That's a first. And it'll probably be a last. Yeah.
All right.
But, JT was just giving Ray some damage control.
All right, so Joey resets himself, and he tries to open the TV show as part of this. Plugs ECW in general and the television, but out comes Woman to chant of "You Sold Out." She says, "Tune into Monday nights where you can see action that's just like ECW." Woman says she plans on sticking around here, too. Why not? She says she can do whatever she wants, and she'll have to be dragged out. Woman asks Joey when his contract up and asks if he would like to come with her. Sandman comes out, and Woman asks if he changed his mind and wants to come with her, too. But Sandman says he doesn't want to come with her. He's looked back at what they've done, and in retrospect, he sees that Woman has been a bitch her whole life. Woman plans to stay in ECW a long time by being a bitch, and anyone who thinks they can remove her physically can come try or forever hold their peace. In comes Too Cold Scorpio, and Sandman says, "Where you been?" Scorpio cuddles up on Woman, says he's been riding around in the limo talking business, and it's looking good. But all he can say is, "Bitch, Nancy, get the fuck out of here." Woman says he can't talk to her like that, but he scoops her up and carries her to the back, just like we saw recently on TV. This time he goes out the door, walks through the snow, throws her in a limo, and that is it for Woman as the limo drives off through the night into the snow. And, kind of struggles to pull away in the snow as well, but it does. So we kind of talked about this last week, and I think we made it seem like that was it for Woman, but we kind of get a repeat of it here. So I don't know if they did it for the New York crowd, especially as well. But it's pretty much the same angle, right? They kind of tease Scorpio going, he says no, and then he carries her out. So they kind of repeat it, but this is officially it now for Woman, who had showed up, and it was already on WCW television with Hogan and Savage. And this is building toward her turn as Super Brawl, or at least in the weeks leading up to Super Brawl, I should say, where she would end up joining Ric Flair, and then Elizabeth would turn as well. You can hear all that chronicled on Wrestling Warzone, as I mentioned earlier. So again, we get a farewell. I guess we could reiterate some of the points we talked about, right? Did she really get the full comeuppance she deserved, given the hell she put a lot of guys through? I don't know. But that said, at the very least, they're treating her with a little bit of respect, because she deserved it, I think, for all she's meant to this promotion. And you get a little bit of payback with Sandman and Scorpio finally kind of realizing she's been a bitch and carrying her out of there. So I guess it's about the best we were going to get.
I don't mind, you know, them kind of doing this again for the New York crowd. And I like the ending of it better, the out in the snow and into the limo. That was awesome. But I was confused by her message, because she was like, "Look, I'm not going anywhere. I'm staying here." And then she's like, "Y'all want to come with me?" And I'm like, "Which is it? Are you staying or going?" but of course, you know, she, it is what it is. Like we said, it was fitting for her, and the guys got to bro out again, which is always fun.
Mm-hmm.
Johnny.
I think they just wanted to make it like, oh, you know, she changed her mind and she wanted to stay. But it's like, no, fuck you. We're kicking you out now. Just
to, right, right.
Just so they could get the last laugh. Just to mix it up a little. But it was good. And, you know, like we said for the last time, at least they tried for a little respect and give it a little closure to the character.
Yeah, I like your point, John, there. I like that, you know, it kind of puts ECW over in the end, right? Woman's not leaving them. They're firing her. She wanted to stay and dominate the wrestling world, and they didn't want her anymore because she's now associated with the enemy in WCW.
Yeah, because they're getting a little tired, because, you know, the last 10 times it's been, you know, people obviously leaving for greener pastures. So
right.
They kind of got to put a, you know, put a stop to that.
Johnny, do you want to come with me to this next segment?
Yeah, always.
Stevie Richards and Blue Meanie are now out there with Joey Styles. Busy night for Joey. They say Raven sent them out to deliver a message. There's a contract for Sandman to challenge for him for the world title in the near future. And Raven's been kind enough to give Sandman one opportunity to back out of that match. Stevie asks for the answer, and Sandman says he's never backed down from a fight. Stevie says Sandman thinks he's tough with his cane and that Stevie's a wuss. And the crowd is thirsty for Sandman to fuck him up during this. Stevie says he's generous,
fuck him
though.
Fuck Sandman. Fuck him up.
Stevie is generous and gives Sandman one more chance, and if he doesn't, he'll have to Stevie kick him. Meanie's giggling and asks if he can do it, and Stevie obliges. The crowd chants, "You fat fuck," as Meanie sets up and tries but barely gets his leg up, and Sandman just whaps him with the cane. Sandman tells Stevie that he's coming for his belt. Sandman leaves, and Stevie says Raven's going to kill him. He asks Joey for advice, but Joey says he's got nothing. Meanie's out cold from the cane shot. In come Raven and Kimona. Stevie tries to explain himself. He's stuttering. Raven calls him a moron, and he says he gave Stevie that fat hell of a flunky, or piece of fat hell as a funky.
Piece of fat hell. I never heard that.
It was amazing.
A piece of fat hell. I never heard that in my life.
And even with that flunky, Stevie just continuously gets the crap picked out of him. Stevie also failed giving Beulah her pills once a day. I like how it was his job to make sure Beulah was on birth control.
I know. Dr. Richards.
And then Raven smacks him. Raven smacks him across the head. Raven says he sent Stevie to give a message to a man that cannot handle alcohol. And then says a bunch of stuff that gets beeped. He says Stevie blew delivering the message yet again, and he's close to getting fired. If Stevie's big surprise isn't big enough here tonight, he's getting fired. So Raven slaps him again and drags him by his hair and demands the surprise while continuing to paintbrush him around. Stevie begs Raven to stop and grimaces in pain. He says he's hurting him. Stevie says he does have a big surprise that'll shock the world. It'll be on every newscast, hard copy, Current Affair, 2020, Fox News, which I forgot was even a thing at this point in 1996. Stevie stops and digs through Meanie's Daisy Dukes, which is kind of funny but kind of edgy, and pulls out a piece of paper. Stevie puts on a pair of glasses, that was really funny, and reveals that as of February 3rd, 1996, how many 25 years to the day that we're doing this, he engaged in a legal lawsuit against Missy Hyatt for sexual harassment last month in Queens, right where this fat slob in the crowd is sitting today. Dancing Stevie was violated and molested and touched in parts he's afraid to wash 6 months ago. This legal lawsuit, thanks to a fat lawyer from Scarsdale, says Missy has made him uncomfortable as a man in the workplace. Out comes Missy Hyatt and gets at his face, and Stevie threatens a restraining order. Missy says that the best day Stevie ever had was kissing her. Raven gets at Missy's face and says there's another option. She can join the champion, but she says she's been there before. Missy says to look at her and him and the whore he's with now, and that Raven can't measure up, and everyone knows he has a low sperm count since she got pregnant by Tommy. Raven says he's going to beat her ass, and out comes Sandman to make the save with the cane. Missy asks Joey if he's over 18. He says he is, or he was when the segment started. Missy says Sandman is having some career problems and needs to be nurtured by Mama. Missy takes a drag off Sandman's cigarette, and they leave together. This is a very long segment, but a very fun segment. Stevie is great. The meanie kick was hilarious. Raven is taking more, talking more now, becoming a much bigger asshole. His anger is raging, clearly all stemming from losing Beulah, even though he's not admitting it. Very, very upset about all this. Sandman's fully becoming a face, which was an unexpected piece of this as well. Typically, CW, one door closes, it gets reopened, right? So a woman leaves, in comes Missy, to keep things moving. So a long segment, but lots get accomplished through it. And it seems like Sandman has a new valet. So, Johnny, what did you think of this whole kit and caboodle?
Oh, it was wild. Raven, just a total prick and real dark, saying that how he's going to beat Missy's ass and calling her a bitch. And but it's a good setup to transition Missy with Sandman.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good fit, right? I think he needs. I think he needs a valet. Like, I think it works real well with him. It's a good pairing.
Yes, yes.
And it's a very big difference than woman, right? In a presentation with Missy. So with woman was very businesslike. She kind of cleaned him up and was taking him to the top and leading the way as his business manager. And now he's kind of almost becoming a beloved face, and he's almost back to the Peaches days where he's kind of scrounging around and just kind of with the hot chick that he's going to be banging and just, you know, drinking and smoking, like just kind of, this is a rebound. So I think it's a good fit too. But I also liked all the stuff that played out with Raven becoming more maniacal in the wake of Beulah and Tommy, and really taking it out on Stevie, Jenny. So what'd you think of that in addition to Missy?
No, I really loved Raven in this. Like, his they kind of space out what they let him, or, you know, how he talks and when he talks. It's not super a lot, you know, even during promos, he doesn't do like these long drawn out promos. And whenever he does talk, like, he usually comes out with some sort of gem, like piece of fat hell or something else that pops me. And it's just, I don't know why I keep being surprised and delighted by it, but I am. So keep that up. And then, yeah, definitely felt like this was some sort of like a Peaches vibe between them two. Like, I don't want to say great value Peaches, or do I want to say
no,
that?
She's like actual on-brand Peaches is great on value Missy Hyatt. Yeah.
But, yeah, the "you need to be nurtured by mama" line was pretty great. Mm-hmm. That whole thing just looks very dangerous, and a lot of fuckery to ensue there with that combination. So I'm super excited to see more of them. And, you know, it's going to be hard to keep Stevie and Missy away from each other with that restraining order. Mm-hmm. Since they're both in the promotion now. Curious to see how that plays out as well.
And we'll see if Raven remains pissed, because Stevie really did deliver on that promise very well. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. Oh, our favorite honorary Italian is here, JT Smith. And speaking of J. Smith, Jenny, our fellow honorary Italian, are you ready for your JT Smith approved Italian lesson of the day?
I am.
Today's word, fangul.
Come on.
Have you heard this one?
I have heard this one, yes. Okay.
Do you know what it means?
You guys, so no, I do not.
Okay, well, originally, it was a Italian phrase used to mean, go do it in the ass.
That's vaffanculo. You gotta get the va, the va in front of vaffanculo.
But generally has been kind of disseminated to mean more just fuck you.
Just fuck. Without the va.
Yeah. So, I mean, the original phrase, the full phrase was va fare in culo, which is fuck you fucked in the ass, right? I mean, that's... And it kind of got shortened to va fa culo, and then tu fangul is most of these things. Kind of mutadel. We'll get to that eventually, but... So would you like to attempt to pronounce this one?
Yes, say it again.
Fangul.
Fangul.
Va fangul.
Va fangul.
Va fangul.
Va fangul.
Right, so what did you learn last episode, Jenny? Have you done your homework?
We did, yeah, we did, you just said it.
Maron.
Oh, Maron. Come on. Madonna fangul. Yeah. This was, I mean, this was my life growing up. I'm sure Johnny's too. It's the words I hear often. Get cut off of traffic. Oh, fangul, my own.
I love it.
One more time.
Sorry, I got the giggles.
All right, compose yourself. Before you do your comments on the match, you can...
All right.
All right, God, in come the Dudley family as Bubba Ray Dudley will take on our favorite Italian, who marches out of his leather jacket. His head is all bandaged up. I don't know why.
I don't either.
He's got a cranial suture.
Something's always going on.
He got shot.
This fucking guy. So the Dudleys all pile out. The fans are into them. Bubba's all smiles. DW, Dick, and Sign Guy with him. Dick is telling that fucking crutch from getting hit by the car or whatever the fuck happened with him. Bubba starts stuttering, and JT says he can't wrestle because he gets shot. There you go, Johnny. Gets shot and has a fracture in his cranial suture. JT offers Bubba $100 to avoid the match.
$100?
triple digits. He's completely mangling his Italian as he's trying to do it. Bubba shows off the money to his brothers, and Joey says to take it, but it's a setup, and JT hits him in the balls and takes the money back. JT lands a few shots, but Bubba hits a Bubba bomb with an assist from Dick and picks up the squash win. Bubba shows off the cash that he steals back, and Joey says he's going to party at Goldfingers. And Joey says they'll be right there behind him. The fans beg for Bubba to dance, but he's hesitant because of Dick, who won't allow it. Finally, he gets the okay, and Bubba dances to his big pop. This is all, again, to continue to just get the Dudleys in front of the fans for a few minutes to dance and kind of get their moment. JT is hilarious. So I think he's found a wonderful gimmick with this fucking thing. Not just speaking from a person with a heavy Italian heritage, but... I find it entertaining because he's so freaking inept at it, but he tries so hard. Bubba's dancing is like, it's like Hogan posing to these fans at this point. That's all they want to see. They don't care about the match. As long as Bubba poses, they're happy, or dances, they're happy. So I win a quarter of a star just to squash Jenny. I need to hear the homework though first.
Vangul.
Vafangul.
Vafangul. Yeah, I'm barely tolerating this still. The best part was JT and his nonsense. The long intros just sucked my soul, like my will to live. So, you know, I gave it the gentleman's quarter star, Johnny.
Just a half of the nonsense. After Bubba got the $100 back in and he was, making the titties motion and he was acting all excited and going to the strip club. Didn't it remind you of, remember our first WrestleMania trip when we took somebody to the gentleman's,
It's only Saturday!
For the first time. He was acting the same way. We took somebody for the first time.
Acting a fool.
It wasn't Goldfingers, but it was, yeah.
They love gold. It's like, they should start sponsoring. I feel like they talk about it constantly. It's like the official,
yes.
Definitely the official, gentleman's club of extreme... Championship wrestling. One more time, Jenny.
Fangul,
Va Fangul.
Maron. Yeah.
Maron.
Fuck you in the ass. Those Arabian dreams are upon us as Sabu is here to take on Mr. Hughes. The Roughneck has returned with Shane Douglas, apparently. He just kind of popped up recently, but he's here. We'll see if he lasts longer. His track record usually means he'll be here for about a month or so, but we'll see. Usual dalliance from Hughes. Joey says Lex Luger was afraid of Hughes, and then he stole Undertaker's urn, and everywhere he's been, he's fought everyone. Sabu hits a big pop. He continues to just work his way up the ladder. Kind of a weird match. Joey talks about Sabu once crazy gluing his cracked knuckle to not miss any time in the ring. Sabu goes for Hughes's legs off the bell, but Hughes clubs away and knocks him to the floor. They spill outside where Sabu backdrops him into the crowd, heads in and flies back out into him with a springboard plancha off a chair. The crowd is loving it. It was a great spot. Sabu climbs in, has another plancha, but Hughes catches him and rams him to the post. Hughes kicks away at the ribs, smashes him with the chair, and heads back inside. He buries some strikes as Sabu keeps firing back to no avail. Sabu has a DDT, but Hughes recovers with a clothesline. Sabu bails out. Hughes stalks Sabu as he's setting up a table at ringside, but Sabu fends him off with chair shots. Back inside, he springs into Hughes, knocks him to the apron. Sabu charges and dives, but Hughes ducks, and Sabu bounces off the rock-hard table in just an ugly, ugly bit. Back inside, Hughes hits a shoulder breaker. Sabu drills him with a slingshot leg lariat for two. Hughes catches Sabu in a leapfrog and hits a sidewalk slam for a good near fall. Hughes goes to a nerve hold, gets another slam for a near fall before hitting a sidewalk slam for two. Sabu comes back with a head scissors takeover. Things spill to the floor. Hughes misses a charge and bangs into the post. Sabu puts him on the table and puts him through with a slingshot leg drop. Back inside, Sabu gets an inside cradle for two, but then Hughes blocks a hurt Carano with a powerbomb. Hughes heads up top, but Sabu catches him, peppers him with punches. Hughes blocks a top rope hurt Carano, meets him with a clothesline off the middle rope for two. Gets a big sidewalk slam for two, kicks Sabu to the floor. Sabu slides in, Hughes puts him on a chair, puts a chair on his face, heads up top, but misses a big splash. Sabu grabs a chair and hits the Arabian facebuster to pick up the very hard-fought win. And I thought this was fun and way better than you may expect when he told us on paper. Mm-hmm. Hughes hung with Sabu, and it was a good base for his spots. Sabu does a nice job weaving the insanity into a story of the match, and he slowly climbing back up the ladder, notching quality wins. I thought maybe this was just a touch long, but overall was good. So I went 2 3/4, Jenny. I thought it was a good match, and I didn't know what to expect on paper. Definitely had train wreck potential, but they delivered.
Yeah, was not expecting to see Mr. Hughes on this card, especially against Sabu, but I guess that's just what they're doing, you know, just like kind of randomly putting him in there and just letting him go to town on dudes, which is fine with me. I mean, we're all happy about watching Sabu fly around the ring. I did 2 3/4 as well. I really like the cool DDT off the shoulders. That was awesome. And then that chair or the table. I don't know if it was supposed to break or he just hit it wrong because he kind of hit it on the edge, not like kind of flush. But that looked nasty. But everything Sabu does is nasty. And he just keeps getting up. He's amazing. I never get tired of watching him. And I really like this match. What the fuck, Johnny?
No, 2.5. Those chair shots looked rough on Sabu. He wasn't pulling those. There was some good violence there, and the sidewalk and the power slams. All his moves look good. So it's kind of curious why he never sticks around in one place, because you know Hughes is competent. And, you know, of course he's obviously he's physically appealing. You know, he's very menacing in there. So it's kind of curious how he never stuck around. But it's a good opponent for Sabu. Made Sabu look good. Gives him a nice win.
I just love Sabu, too. Like, he's come back in. He's obviously a big name. But he just keeps kind of fighting these matches and picking up wins. And they're really just easing him back into things as they prep to, I'm sure, give him a much bigger push soon when he's ready. And he's just way better than you may think. When you think of Sabu, you think flying around, brawling, chair tables. Mm-hmm. But he builds a match so well where that stuff just feels like it's part of the flow and not forced. Like we've seen with other guys that are out there just using weapons and it kind of feels forced. So.
And his body is literally taped together.
Yes, it is. I don't know how he moves.
His entire shoulder, all his fingers. I mean, he's just a fucking mess.
He's been a welcome addition back. 95 felt like the back end of 95 felt like we took a break, and now some of the, you know, him, he's back. Mm-hmm. Douglas is back. It's like, and they're both kind of refreshed. So, we talked a bit about JT Smith and Honorary Italians and the heritage. Where I live is obviously a very heavy Italian background, and something just popped up in my feed that I thought you guys would get a laugh and because we were talking about it. So, two of the Senate members in the state, I had to look twice to make sure I was reading this right. Two different guys. One is named Frank Lombardi, and one is named Frank Lombardo. That's about as Italian Rhode Island as it gets. Frank Lombardi of Cranston and Frank Lombardo of Johnston, both on the Senate.
So. I bet they look exactly alike.
Oh, I'm sure.
Only separated by one vowel.
I'm sure they both have like the white hair, a little coif. They both wear the jeans with the tucked in button down and the jacket, brown belt, brown shoes. Eating the calamari.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to be stalking them later.
Lombardo and Lombardi, attorneys at law. Fango! Our former world
now
champion.
Sandman's Italian.
Our former world champion, the Sandman. Teaming up with Two Cold Scorpio, his buddy, to take on the Gangsters. Kind of a cool match here as the division resets itself. We've talked about it. Public Enemy's gone. We get the Eliminators. We get the Pitbulls. The Gangsters are also back on the scene. So we'll see how things evolve. Scorpio Sandman been a lot of fun as a pairing. The Gangsters bring out their shopping cart full of weapons, as always. And they're already poured in the ring as Scorpio Sandman head out. Things break down right away. All four are brawling in and out of the ring. Mustafa busts Sandman with a chair. Scorpio nails New Jack with a frying pan. Scorpio dumps Jack outside, flies into him with a plancha. Mustafa chucks Sandman around the ring until Scorpio hits him with a trash can lid. Strikes and weapons are flowing heavily as trash is flying in the ring from the fans. Mustafa crashes into the railing while Jack hits Scorpio with a pan. Scorpio comes back with a kick and a chair shot, and then Samnit flies over the top into New Jack with a Nintendo. Jack grabs the Nintendo and keeps using it, and then a chair of Samnit is just out on his feet as usual. Mustafa hits Scorpio with a power slam in the ring for two. They continue to trade shots with those pairings. Scorpio hits a gorgeous moonsault on Mustafa for two as Samnit hulks up with a trash can. Mustafa dropkicks Scorpio off the top to the floor, meets him with a double axe handle. Samnit shoves New Jack in the ring and meets him with a slingshot somersault leg drop. Mustafa batters Scorpio with a chair. Sandman makes a save and then uses a toilet seat on New Jack. Sandman slams New Jack and heads up top and hits a big leg drop. And then they battle around the ring a bit more until Scorpio hits a twisting splash off the top for two. Sandman unloads on New Jack with a cookie sheet as Mustafa kicks Scorpio to the floor. Mustafa and Jack batter Sandman with a cane as he staggers around in a fog until Scorpio makes a save and sprays Mustafa with hairspray and picks up the win for his team. Scorpio revives Sandman and they celebrate. A typical garbage match that's kind of leaking more and more into ECW. We've talked about this. To me, it was a big trope of Public Enemy. But Sandman Scorpio also a little bit guilty of it, as are the gangsters, which is why I like the stuff like Sabu does. And I like some of the stuff we saw earlier where it's not as overbearing. I don't mind it blended in. Like we saw in the Dreamer match where they were able to mix it in without it overtaking the match. And I like that more than just weapon. And I get it. The crowd at the time was into it. So it is what it is. But this was a little bit more tame, too, even though they did use a lot of weapons. I love Sandman and Scorpio as a team, though. Like, their partnership, their friendship, their bromance is really fun. The gangsters keep sowing chaos of the promotion. A tier down from the usual output of the style, but a pretty solid way to close the show, Johnny. I went 2.5 stars.
Only 2 stars. I think it was one of the weaker main events. Especially these two teams, there's really nothing personal between them. So it's really just violence for the sake of violence and just weapons and chaos for no reason. There's really no angles built up between these teams. So a little disappointing as a main event.
I would agree. It's probably one of the lesser main events that we've seen. You can sort of kind of barely take notes during a match like this. Is like all my notes are just like weapons, like toilet seat, cookie sheet. Yeah. Pool cue. I liked the toilet seat. That was fun. The cane just basically gets used so much that it shreds. Like can barely finish off Sandman with the like half of the cane. I mean, it's fun. It's fun to watch. Too Cold had a nice moonsault that looks pretty good. You know, when there was a little bit of wrestling in there, Too Cold was doing it for the most part. But yeah, I'm right about the 2.5 range for this one. A little bit disappointing for an ending, but it's fine.
And that does wrap up our show. So we close out there. Interesting night of action in Queens and some big stuff going down. So let's do our awards and we'll wrap things up. Best match of the night for me was Rey Mysterio and Juventud Guerrera.
Yes, Rey and Juve, yep.
I think I went with Douglas and Dreamer versus Raven Richards.
God, what a mark you are, for shame.
I know.
Worst match was our friend JT Smith and Bubba Ray Dudley.
Yes.
Easily.
Best moment, I went to Bigelow's debut, which was really cool, and then Stevie's promo, which I thought was great. The whole thing with Raven and all that.
This one's hard. You know, all the Raven stuff is awesome, but then that fucking Headhunters moonsault blew my fucking brains out, so I gotta put it on there.
Probably Missy hooking up with Sam.
That's good, too.
Yeah, definitely some good moments on this show. All right, most 90s, A Current Affair, for sure. Shark Attack Kid's rat tail mullet they had going on. And Stevie's yellow Razor Ramon shirt, which is pure 1995.
Oh. I would add Missy's outfit.
Poor haircut. Paulie's, like that leather rugby ECW jacket.
That was sweet.
Stock Rising, Taz by far. The Eliminators, Mysterio, Stevie, and Bubba for me.
Headhunters and Damian Kane. Oh, and I would put Mr. Hughes in there as well.
Sabu and Taz. Yeah.
Stock Falling Shark Attack Kid, Damian Kane. I went 911 since he may be gone and he was kind of buried, if so.
Yeah.
And Woman, again, since she was thrown out of the promotion.
Agree.
Yep.
Final grade. I thought this was a very solid show. We didn't get that blowaway match. You know, we kind of topped out at 3.5. Got some big moments, though, with Bigelow's debut, Missy and Sandman, continuing issues with Raven and Stevie. So stuff is building. It was a very good show, but we didn't have anything that really dragged. Even the JT Smith Bubba thing was short. So I went 6.5. I thought, you know, it was a good show, not a great show, but it got a lot done. And I didn't feel like at the end of it I had wasted my time or anything. I really enjoyed watching it.
I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10. All the same reasons. The Bam Bam was pretty big, so I think it elevates it a little bit.
I'm going to be the low man again. 5.5.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah, that main event was disappointing. That should seal the deal for the show, the main event. And that was a weak spot. And there was most of the moments were... Well, mostly like angles and you know, promo segments more than the wrestling, so little more down than you guys, but still nothing horrible.
Alright, well, we'll be back in 2 weeks time with more extreme wrestling action, but before then, Jenny, anything you want to talk about that we didn't cover already?
Well, I have a podcast feed. It's called The Jenny Physician. I have debuted a new show on there. It's called Hot Tokes. It is a show about the education of marijuana. So me and Vanessa Shark talk to you guys about our smoking do's and don'ts, the history of weed, and whatever the hell else we want to come up with. So it's a fun show, even if you don't get high. It's still fun to listen to. Also, we have a new episode of The Journey Through Infinity with Doctor Strange being the next one up on our watch in the MCU. Also, there is a new episode of Bianca's First Time where we watch Mrs. Doubtfire and are traumatized by it because it hits different when you're an adult. You can find me at Jenny Physician on Twitter as well.
You better call Vanessa the Shark Attack Kid, please.
Oh, okay, I will.
Johnny, anything you want to talk about?
No, we're good. You covered it.
All right. That'll do it for us. Stay extreme, everyone. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Talk to you then. Yeah.